accession number 18666, Real 4.
The notice went up on the notice board that leaving Cyprus was available. I had to apply. We were discussing this in the billet, and one chap comes in and says, I've applied for leave. Sergeant says, I can't have it. I must explain that before this, we had a visit from a high-ranking Royal Signals officer, and we all had to go on parade, and he went along the line asking each of us what our job was and what we were employed on. And after that parade, the rumour was that some of us would be posted, because as the regiment was no longer in a war situation, they didn't require the number of attached Royal Signals personnel that they had. So this chap, he went to see about leaving Cyprus, and he come back and he says, Sergeant says I can't go on leave because I'm being posted. So we all said, where to? Who else is being posted? He wouldn't say. So I thought, best way to find out, go out the troop office, knock the door. Yes, Sergeant, I want to apply for leave in Cyprus. Sorry, Bert, no good you applying for leave in Cyprus, you're being posted. Where to? I don't know. When? I don't know. Well, can't you tell us anything? No. That was that. Nothing said, nothing more was said. Sometime later, weeks later, a couple of weeks later, 3 weeks later, I went on guard duty. I came off next morning feeling like nothing on earth as usual, did me day's chores, had me tea, went to the open air cinema, first house. Come out of the cinema, went to the naffy, cup of tea, back to the billet. 9:15, I'm going to bed. A bit difficult because people would come in, put the lights on, but I wanted my sleep. I go to bed at 9:00. 11:15 or so, somebody wakes me up. I said, what's going on? Come on, Bert, we're being posted in the morning. Get up and pack your kit bag. I said, you can't be serious. We're being posted in the morning. We've got an early morning call for breakfast. Get up and pack your kit bag. I said, no, I'll do it in the morning. You will never do it in the morning, he says. Get up now and pack your kit bag. I got out of bed about 11:30. I had to switch a light on, which upset everybody else in the room. Take all the stuff out of my locker and stow it into my kit bag, and get myself ready to be posted in the morning. I eventually got to sleep about 1:30 that night. At 5:30 in the morning, there was an early call for breakfast. Up to the cookhouse for breakfast at 6 or something. Up to the guard room by 7 or 7:30. On a truck, down to the RAF aerodrome, which I can't remember the name of. Me and I think there was 4 or 5 others. We waited down the airport for a few hours, which makes this business of getting up early in the morning so seem so useless, you know. Still no idea where we're going. We eventually loaded onto an RAF Viking, and we're told we're going up to Benghazi in North Africa. We fly 800 miles up across the desert towards Benghazi. We come in over the desert. The plane went up and down like a yo-yo. Made most of us feel airsick. And we land at Benina Airport, which is a about 12 to 15 miles outside Benghazi. And there, alongside the airport, is a Royal Signals camp. Off the airport, off the aerodrome, walk through into the camp, and that's where we're posted to. Middle East Armoured Force Signals, or something like that. We, of course, we have interviews with the CO when we get there. I wasn't all that happy, as you can imagine. But there again, I'm seeing another part of the world I'm in now, in
Libya.
Nothing to do there for us, really. We've been posted from Egypt because actually there was nothing to do, but we had plenty to do with repairing telephones. Here, nothing for us to do. The people already there have got certain jobs. What I try and do is keep out of the way. Just keep out of the way. The most difficult thing to do is to have nothing to do and keep out of the way. But I managed to do it for the best part of 2 months or more. We had things to do. We had to go on parades in the morning. And when the hot weather came in, we used to start at 7 and finish at 1:30 to 2 o'clock. Then it was afternoon siestas. Or they would lay on a truck and go down to the shore in the Mediterranean at Benghazi. Or we could make our own way down to Benghazi. No, we used to lay on the truck down to Benghazi. We'd go to the cinema in Benghazi. The Army Cinema Corporation had a cinema in Benghazi, which we used to visit. Swimming in the Med. But apart from that, there was a small cinema on the camp. Yes, right. The food was pretty rare. Oh, this chap used to take his own route marches across the desert at times. Funny thing. But apart from that, my stay there was pretty uneventful, but that's where I spent the last 2.5 months of my career. And my demob was getting pretty close, and the notice went up. I had to be ready to catch an airplane on such and such a date in June at such and such a time. Our company officer, squadron officer, came in and said goodbye. I walked out to the airport. I was on another RAF Viking. I thought I was going home. No. We're going over the Med. He said, down there is Malta. That's where we're landing. Looked out the window, and Malta was down there. It didn't look very large. We landed at Luka Airport in Malta. We all get off. How long am I going to be here? Till there's a flight ready to take you home. Taken to a camp. I think it was called Medina, somewhere in Malta. Kipped down for the night. Prayed in the morning. Same thing happened. So named Bert. Right, you the cookhouse. Go across the cookhouse. Tin wash. I spent all day in the tin wash. What the rest of the lads do? Something, then they're off down the Valletta for the rest of the day. Next day, is to me, cookhouse. I says, excuse me, I was in the cookhouse yesterday. I mean, the way you're going on, I should be in the cookhouse all week. Give somebody else a try. Oh, all right, he says. So I then did something else, and I finished at lunchtime, and with the rest of the lads, we caught the bus down into Valletta. It was quite an interesting place. Looked at the Grand Harbour, walked through the town. Very nice. Spent a week in Malta. Then one morning, right, get your kit together. Take them down to Luka Airport. This time a Viking. Run by a private airline, whose name escapes me just a moment. We land at Nice in the south of France for refuelling. We're laid off the airport, but we can't go outside the perimeters of the airport. Then it's back on, and we land at Luton. Bus waiting for us to take us down to Good Street in London. We get down to Good Street in London, which is an encampment in one of the old underground, disused underground cellars. Huh? Good Street. Eventually, he comes out, and there was, I don't know, three of us. He said, here's your travel warrants, Victoria, get a train down to Newton Abbot. I said, can we stay overnight? I've got no facilities for keeping you here overnight. Get down and get a train back to Newton Abbot. So we got down, I think it was Victoria. Got the train down to Exeter, where we would have to change to get the local train, which runs along the valley up to Newton Abbot. Back to the Royal Signals Transit Camp at Denby Barracks at Newton Abbot. I think it was Denby Barracks. Denby Barracks. Where you start meeting people you hadn't seen for 2 years. Because you all went in on the same group number. And you all get mobbed on the same group number. So I get demobbed and I come home. I got some money. I go down to the local cycle shop. I buy myself a brand new bicycle. At the age of 23, I can afford a brand new bicycle. Marvellous. But I haven't finished with the army because I've now got to do 3.5 years territorial service, which, as they say, is another story.
How do you feel now in 1999 about having done national service?
Marvellous. Wouldn't have missed it. Wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Why do you say that?
Because it's given me a wealth of knowledge. I've gotten it. I've belonged to the Korean Veterans Association. It's given me an experience which I wouldn't have had, you see. Going across the Indian Ocean, I know it's a troop ship. To be up on deck at night time, under the stars. My friend and I, we used to sit there and say, people pay pounds for this. Pounds and pounds to do this. And we're getting paid for it.
Right. I think you've been back to Korea in recent years.
Postscript. My wife and I went back to Korea in 1993 under the revisit scheme. Where, when I went out in 1952, we took just over five weeks on a troop ship. In 1993, we boarded an aircraft at Heathrow, and 12 hours later, we were in Korea. The people there made us so welcome. They put us up in a very, very nice hotel, which I believe is owned by the Korean Veterans Association. They took us out daily in buses. And on the side of the bus was welcome to Korean veterans, Korean War veterans. And everywhere we stopped, people would wave and clap to us. They took us up to the Panmunjom, where the peace agreement was signed. Korean Folk Village, to the 27th floor of a high-rise block, to a restaurant for lunch. They couldn't have been more kind and considerate. And when we come home, the man at the passport control, as we went through, my wife went first, and I was stood on the line. My wife had the passports in her handbag, and she went through. And you had to fill a customs declaration out when we went. And it said the reason for a visit. And I just put BKVA. And this customs chap at the airport, he looked at our passports. He looked at my customs declaration. and he waved me forward. He said, "Excuse me, what is BKVA? I said, "British Korean Veterans Association." "Did you serve in the Korean War?" "Yes." "Where?" "Above the Imjin River." "Well, on behalf of myself and my country, may I thank you for your sacrifice and your service." I said, "Well, thank you very much." I walked through and I was almost in tears. They looked after us so well. And this, we then went through into departure land, showed our boarding passes. I asked for a non-smoking seat beside the aisle. The gentleman spoke on the phone in Korean to somebody. He handed our boarding passes back. We got on a Boeing 747 and we were shown to club class seats. My wife, myself and two other couples. We had club class service all the way back to Heathrow. And I thought, excellent. Whatever I did for those Koreans back 40 years ago, they've repaid me. And the country is unbelievable. What they've done in 40 years has gone from a farming community or agricultural community to an industrial community with high-rise blocks of flats. Seoul, when I went through it in 1952, was little more than a bomb site. Today, there's modern high-rise buildings, flats, public transport system, marvellous, cars, so many cars, it's worse than London. But it was marvellous. And I wouldn't miss my national service. I moaned at the time. I moaned while I was doing it. But I wouldn't have missed it.